Welcome to today's episode of Journey to There, the invigorating podcast that's exploring the intersection between personal and business growth. And now your hosts, Tracy DeForge and Russ Reba.
Well, get ready for more amazing insight on today's episode of the Journey to There podcast, the intersection between personal and business growth, along with Tracy DeForge. I'm Russ Reba. Tracy, did you hear that?
I did. Hello?
I'm hearing voices. You're hearing the voices inside my head? Are you hearing what I'm hearing?
Oh, now I'm following you. I was like, I thought we had a technical problem.
No, I think I have a technical problem.
I think those voices inside your head, Russ, are really scary and no one should hear them.
Listen, there's voices inside all of us. It's a matter of me being crazy enough to share my voices with you.
I'm scared of that, actually.
In addition to listening to the podcasts, make sure you log on to journeytothere.com because the website really complements the show. You're going to find show notes, some bios, past podcasts you can download, you can subscribe. So there you have it. Tracy, what do you have for us today?
Well, if the audience has not figured out already, we are actually going to be spending a considerable amount of time today talking about our inside voices and actually some outside voices too. And what I mean by that is that we are going to explore finding your way by listening to your inside voice, and also overcoming your negative self-talk and how to handle negative talk from other people. And I might just offer up some tips that I've used in my consulting practice that have helped entrepreneurs overcome the voices.
So this is not the inside voice that I keep telling my five-year-old to use.
Well, I actually have a great question about that, but I think we'll probably get to that a little further down.
Ooh, a little teaser.
Hold that thought. But I want to start out talking about strong gut instincts. And I guess what I mean by that, because that could mean different things to different people, but what it means to me is those moments when I have had a very strong, and I literally do refer to it as an inside voice, but not in a negative way. I have had moments in my life that I've had just like this really deep gut feeling, inside voice that has given me direction on things to do, choices to make, places to go, things to give up, things to add to my life. And every time I've actually followed those gut instincts, which I can really specifically think of three pretty powerful ones, that has made a significant life change for me that led me to a much more positive place. And I was just curious if you had a story about strong gut instincts and if you had followed it or if you didn't follow it.
You know,
because I'm putting the pressure on you to start it this time because my stories are really long.
I could go all day about gut instincts I've had about business and decisions I've made. Let me go back to, I guess, the thing that makes me what I am today. I was all about being successful. I was, you know, European grandparents, and your success is based on your financial wealth and all that. And a light bulb popped in my head and said, who says, I guess it was a voice inside my head, who says that success has to be measured by how much money you make for your family or, you know, for your personal income? And what's the point if you're not enjoying what you do every day? Now, I've got the best of both worlds because I enjoy what I do to earn a living, but I also enjoy what I do with that living that I earn.
I love the way you said that, Russ, because that is it. I mean, to me, that sums up my passion, my commitment. And really, you know, as we've talked about a couple of times, the whole reason why I even began the Journey to There business or podcast or book a site, because I wanted this message to touch people in many different forms. But what's even more interesting to me about what you said is that it is completely in alignment with the first time that I ever actually really had that experience in a conscious way about the gut instinct. I'm sure I had it way before, but I just never really was super aware of it. But I remember in the moment, I can tell you the date, and it was literally, I'm not kidding, it was March the 7th of 2004, and I was driving back from a a radio conference that had been held in Nashville. And it was about a, I don't know, 4-hour drive from, I was living in Athens at the time, but that's not relevant. So anyway, I'm driving back and I am driving this 4-hour plus drive. I have no music on, which is entirely odd for me because I always have music on. But I was just quietly driving in my car and I had, it was like a voice literally said to me, this is a job. It's not a sick spouse. It's not, you know, a big deal that you're going to think about on your rocking chair when you're 80. It is only a job. And if you left it today, it's okay. And right. I went, yeah. Yeah. And that scared the, you know what, out of me. But at the same time, I'm embarrassed to admit that I really didn't make that association before. I mean, I don't know how much of the population looks at their job that way, but I can assure you that I clearly did not. Like, for me, it was an identity. For me, it was part of my heartbeat. For me, I would have taken a shower and slept at the radio stations if they would have let me. So for me to have that awareness, that inside voice that said, hey, it's just a job. If you left tomorrow, you'd find another one. Well, you'd do something else.
The funny thing is I think the actual job at hand, from what I remember when we worked together in radio, that job at hand, you actually enjoyed. I think it was all of the, and I'm using air quotes, all of the sickness that was associated with that job or that particular environment that may have given you that, you know, that moment.
That brought me to that place. I mean, absolutely, because I tell people today that radio was my very first love and it was my very first heartbreak because I did. I loved it. I remember, and you were there the day that I walked into the first radio station I had ever walked into for work. And I just remember thinking, I would do this for free if they weren't paying me. And then, you know, fast forward about 17 years and I was like, I make more money than I can spend, but I cannot do this anymore. Right. I'm physically, emotionally, spiritually bankrupt. But I just didn't understand that I could leave. Nope. I know it sounds so crazy. It was like I was a hostage in my own career.
Right. And again, I'm going to throw in a career that you actually like doing. Now, think about the tens of thousands of people that are working a job that they despise. It's not something that they would even think of doing, but they're doing it for the sole reason of providing for their family. Now, for those people, I would say, imagine providing for your family and doing the thing that you have a passion to do. That's what I think a lot of people don't realize. They don't get that moment. That voice inside their head hasn't, you know, smacked them back and forth in the face and said, wake up. You've got to do what you like doing, because 5 years goes by, 10, 20, and before you know it, where are you? You're right here.
Yes, so true. And that's what I absolutely do love so much about working with the clients that I work with, because 90% of them are coming to me because they are at that edge of taking that leap and doing something different, making a change, starting a business. And it's that inside voice that has either done one or two things. It's either gotten them to that place to pick up the phone and start working with me, or they are so tired of hearing the voice that says, you can't do it, you shouldn't do it, what about this, what about that? And they're exhausted from their own voices, and so they're looking for some level of relief about it. I mean, I just think, like, if we had some sort of internal, I do believe we actually have an internal GPS, but what I was thinking actually is, what if we all had a Siri, you know, that said, like, how can I help you?
I think I would knock my head into the wall.
Well, but then all of a sudden, instantly all the steps would be laid out for you.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. If I could change the voice every 7 days, I'd be okay with it.
Well, you know what that says to me is that you're just on the right path for the majority of the time. But for people like me that have the worst sense of direction, I could use a little Siri taking the mystery out of it and alleviating some of that fear for sure.
I hear you.
But life-changing detours don't make a lot of sense from the outside looking in sometimes. So I don't even think Siri could solve that problem, because typically when we're talking about the kind of changes we're talking about, the people around us who love us and support us and are married to us or have raised us, they look at us and go, what in the world are you thinking? Yeah. That would be the outside voice. And I don't know. I mean, I remember once that you were telling me about your background with your grandparents and how tough that was on you to kind of go against the grain of how you were raised. And my husband tells me that all the time because his grandparents were raised in the Depression era, and risk taking and planning are not in the same sentence with him.
You know, it was just ingrained. It was ingrained in our heads. Doctor, lawyer, those are associated with careers, occupations that you know, make a great income. And it's like, I don't want to be a doctor. I don't want to be a lawyer. I want to be a radio personality. I mean, radio personalities don't necessarily make a whole lot of money, but that's what I want to do. I want to enjoy myself. And that moment, you know, you said you remembered the actual date. I don't remember the date, but I was in an elevator, and I was sharing an elevator ride with somebody that's very close to me and I had known for pretty much all of my life, and very, very successful individual. And he started rattling off all of these things. Like, you know, Russ, I have the Mont Blanc pen, and I've got the Rolex, and I drive the exotic sports car, and I have everything that we all want, supposedly. You know, he just kind of stopped there, and if you saw his face, it's like at that moment, he, with all of those things, he was very unhappy.
Just empty, like void, I would imagine.
Right. I mean, almost like a blank face. And it's like, well, you know, we've got another several floors to go on this elevator. How do I respond to that? And I just kind of said, well, yeah. And, you know, at that moment, the voices were inside my head saying, it's not about all that. If I could make hundreds of thousands of dollars and I'm not happy, what's the point? So everything that the European upbringing was, you know, all of that was ingrained into my head, just kind of out the window. And it's like, from that point on, I'm going to do what I have to do to survive, but I'm going to be happy doing it.
You know, we were actually a little ahead of our time with these epiphanies that we're sharing, because we are the product of the baby boomer generation. Yeah. And then the millennials, they've got it all figured out. Like, this is their life for them. They don't even think about it. They're like, why wouldn't you do something that you love? So it's fascinating just to think how just in a matter of 10, 15, 20 years that the perception could shift so well. Yeah. But I also really liked what you're saying. It gave me almost a different perspective on the whole topic, which is that you really, and I've always believed this, if you know me, you know this, and I know you know me, is that I've always said everything, I don't necessarily know that everything happens for a reason, good or bad, because bad things happen, life happens, but I do know that I have seen tangible examples of people being put in my path that have influenced my inside voice, if you will, to kind of speak up and talk to myself. And I think that moment that you were on that elevator was really a catalyst to really have you embrace where it was that you were in your life and give you an example of, if you had, you know, we say this in a couple of our episodes, you know, it's not about a right or wrong, it's about a right or a left. And that man in the elevator was a great fast forward. This would have been my life, you know, 20 years from now. And I believe that was a gift, that it was shared with you so that you could keep on the path that you had chosen.
Yeah, I listened to that inside voice, and I'm glad I did, because at the time, I think I was in my 20s, and if I had continued on this path of, this is the way I've got to do it because this is the way I've always heard it's the right way to do, I would have been like so many unhappy people that are just waking up, doing their job, going to sleep, and it's the same thing over and over again. Now, granted, I wake up, I do my job, but I'm happy, I'm enjoying it, and then I go to sleep happy. You know, you can't drag the stress baggage with you for too long, because it'll literally make you sick.
Well, that's exactly what happened to me. I mean, going back to the story I was telling you about in the car on the way back from Nashville, I mean, I was not exaggerating when I said I was physically, emotionally, and spiritually exhausted and bankrupt. I mean, I had had bronchitis for a year and a half, and I hadn't been home to see my family for the holidays in over 3 years. And the thing that was crazy about it, I mean, there are a lot of things that were obviously crazy about it, but it wasn't for me. It wasn't because my my parents or my background or anything really were the driver for my path. My path evolved as a result of genuinely just being consumed with the love of what I do. So it's an interesting dichotomy because there is always sort of that line between in life, between doing what you do or eating what you want to eat or drinking what you want to drink and enjoying it. And then there's that place where you cross over and all of a sudden you're an extremist and you work more than you should work and maybe have other vices to supplement the stress from your work. And for me in that moment in 04, that's what everything was spinning around in my head. And when I had the answer about it's just a job, that gave me the literal clarity to then go into the stations the next day and take a 4-week leave of absence to basically get my health back in check.
Right.
And then at the end, I don't know if you remember this part of the story, but at the end of the 4 weeks, I went back on April the 8th. You know, I have a good memory for these dates because they were so impactful. And I actually said, I can't do this anymore. I mean, I walked away from my 18-year broadcast career, managing 12 radio stations and loving every person on the staff and every minute of the business, but could not handle the, like you referenced, the toxic environment and the amount of stress that had come with that level of management. And it was freeing when I did that. But coming back to that whole life-changing detours and everybody going, what? I mean, I got a lot of that.
I think what you were experiencing was this career that you were so addicted to. You loved it. You loved that. I know you did. The problem is eventually it did not love you back. And when you love something that eventually does not love you back, you start to realize, what am I doing? I'm going in a vicious loop. I'm running into a wall here.
Absolutely. And then the other thing too is that when you are so impassioned in your life about anything, shopping, gambling, sex, whatever, then your vision is really clouded. Those inside voices can't get through. And I think that's why I totally remember that moment, not because of the sex addiction part, but because of the work addiction part, is that who had time for sex when I was working 24 hours a day? But anyway, so I digress. But I just think that that's when I literally gave myself that moment of quiet time in my car driving. Now, this was before cell phones, we have to throw in, because cell phones have totally taken that out of the window now, literally. I come back to, I don't know. Now, this may or may not resonate with everybody, but this is definitely going back to my pre-work stage when I may or may not have seen the Grateful Dead live in concert. I will plead the fifth on whether that actually did or did not happen. However, there was this Grateful Dead song that I've always hung on to, and it has this quote in it, and I've loved it so much because of its complicated simplicity, but it says, sometimes you get shown the light in the strangest of places if you look at it right. And I just feel like that those are those kind of moments, you know? I mean, like your elevator guy, me driving back from a conference, it would have been the last thing I would have thought would have happened in that drive back that I would be leaving my career and starting my own business. But at the same time, and the way the song finishes out is that it seldom turns out the way it does in the song. And that's, I'm living proof of that, but I wouldn't change a minute of it, even though it wasn't always the easiest path.
No, that goes back to the whole thing of no regrets. I strongly believe you should never, ever have regrets about the decisions you've made in your life, because you made those decisions for a reason at the time. And if anything, it's a learning experience.
And whenever I have a conversation, and this could be with a friend, you know, a client, hell, I don't care if it's a stranger, but what I say is that if you knew exactly what you knew at the time, would you still make the same decision? So a lot of people, I think, with the regret situation is they're looking at the bar, not the whiskey bar, but they're looking at the bar, their baseline, where they are in their life right now, and they're judging their past decisions. But for me, because I'm overanalyze everything, I sit there, if I look at a choice that I made and I go, okay, if everything was exactly the same and you knew what you knew then, with all the information you had at the time, would you still make the same decision? And if the answer is yes, then clearly it was the decision that I needed to make. And I really think that helps define it for me.
All right, I'm gonna throw a wrench into this here. No.
Well, you're allowed. That's why I get paid the big bucks.
Bear with me. So right now, I would say If you knew how it was going to turn out, would you make that same decision? And your answer is
yes.
Okay. Now, if I asked you that question when you were in, we all have peaks and valleys. And right. If I asked you that question when you were in a valley and I said, if you can change what you know about that moment, would you still make the same decision? Your answer, it's hard for you to have that answer now, unless you...
No, it actually isn't. Okay. I got one.
What's your answer?
Well, because I live this. And so being the storyteller that I am, so let's go fast forward, right? So April 8th, I left the radio stations and I, you know, resigned. And April 9th, I had a great conversation. You remember Roy, my former husband.
Yes, I do.
Nicest man in the world. And we were, you know, although we weren't married at that time anymore due to my work addiction, we were still best friends, business partners, and very close. And I had spoken with him after I left the, made the decision to leave. And he said, well, let's have lunch next week. And I said, that would be great. I can't do it this week because my parents are coming in town, but next week would work out great. And he said, I have plenty of time. That was the last thing that he said. And on April 15th, I had gone to a Chamber of Commerce meeting, and I was seriously, and I mean, when I say seriously, like I was about 89% there that I was going to revoke my resignation. And I had had a couple weeks to think about it. And I was like, I think I may have overreacted. I was probably being a little dramatic. And I was going to, that day, I was going to have a serious conversation about revoking my resignation. And I got a phone call that Roy had passed away very suddenly of a massive coronary. And, you know, like time froze for me in that moment. And that is a really like heartfelt, heartbreaking story. But that's how I answer your question, because we're all going to have valleys. But in that moment, I was so grateful that I had not gone back into that environment. I was so grateful that I had escaped that environment, because his death required a tremendous amount of attention on my part with business details and estate details and things like that. The workout again, me would have just plunged right through it, not felt the thing, handled all the details, and then crashed at the end. So I don't know if that really answered your question, but
no,
I stand on that a lot.
It brings something up, and I know that, you know, a lot of folks listening might be thinking, you know what, maybe I made a bad decision when 5 years ago I lost that loved one and I wasn't there because I was too busy with my career. Once again, I stress, don't sit and ponder in regret on those decisions, because let's say back 5 years ago you neglected to take care of a family member the way you would today. You made that decision for a reason. That that decision may have sculpted your life in a certain way. You recognize it now. Again, it goes back to no regrets, because I know, you know, on these shows, on these podcasts, we're bringing up things that are making people think. And they need to understand that, you know, if you have those regrets in the past, that's one of the reasons you're listening to this show, is to become inspired and understand that decisions are made for a reason. And maybe you can learn something from, you know, some of the topics we discussed, but have no regrets.
Well, and I don't, you know, I love the philosophy of that. And I think I've been accused many times in my life of having some rose-colored lenses and a unicorn coming out of my head, or at least the horn of a unicorn coming out of my head. So I have had to diffuse my passion towards no regrets to a degree, not to give up on it so much, but just to let go of, like, I think what I'm hearing you say, or how I'm interpreting what you're saying, is the decision was made, move forward, and leave back the guilt. So,
well, I'm saying what you need to take from those, what you call regrets, is a learning experience. You don't learn that stuff growing up in school. You don't learn it at a university. This is life learning lessons. And you can't just, you know, forget about it and sweep it under the rug, but think back to that time where you made that decision, where you wouldn't make that decision today. You did make it then. Learn from it.
So I think this is going to be one of those crossroads where we're going to have where this might be a girl thing versus a male thing versus a female thing.
Oh, I'm ready
and
for this.
And that is only... and I notice I didn't say boy, girl.
I've got my my boxing gloves on now.
We're all grown-ups with our big girl panties on. So girls, females, women, we are literally come out of the womb with this invisible baseball bat, I'm convinced, that we just use to beat ourselves up over any given situation. And I see it all the time in my practice. And when the women come in and I hear them starting to talk, because as we talked about in our intro for Journey to There, this whole process is about identifying the gaps in between those moments of when life happens to you. And so as I hear them talk about it, I hear a lot of a coulda, woulda, shoulda, wisha, done. And I always pause everybody in that moment, and I just say, you know, hold on. And I speak a lot to the way that you just spoke, but then I follow it up with a suggestion for how to overcome that. Because what I have found is that the knowledge of saying no regrets, you made the decision, move on, it is very masculine in its philosophy, in that I believe that men have a lot easier way of being rather black and white about that, which women, you know, the invisible baseball bat is their firstborn, so they're not going to give it up very easily. So it's all good in theory, but how do you actually do that? And what I have done for myself, and I never actually ask my clients to do anything that I haven't tried out on myself, because it wouldn't be fair, including that's why I keep side businesses, so that I can keep in the loop of just the day-to-day operations. But all that being said, my key to changing that negative self-talk or that wish I coulda, shoulda is two things. One is, the next time you say should, is to catch yourself and reframe it and say, I would like to going forward, or any kind of reframing, and eliminate the word should. I've often heard the phrase, don't should yourself. And I think it's a good one. And then the second thing is an action item. And that is all about, like, awareness is the key. So we're having all this great awareness because we've walked through it. But for people who are doing this to themselves and it's so subliminal that they don't even know that they're doing it, then I ask them to wear a rubber band in between the session and the next session, which is usually a week. And each time that they disrespect themselves or disparage themselves,
or beat themselves with a baseball bat,
or even as something as simple as minimize a compliment. Because that's an interesting thing, too. But I ask them to take that rubber band and ask them to just pop their wrist every single time they do it. And I have never had someone come back to me after doing that for a week and say, oh, I never even felt it. I never even popped it once. What a ridiculous waste of time. It's always been more what level of extreme has come back and been like, I had no idea. I said things to myself that I would not even say to my worst enemy. And that awareness is like, bam. And then you all of a sudden you can't live that way anymore, because you start thinking about it and catching yourself. And there's a lot of freedom in that.
Okay. I'll take that. I'll take that to a degree with the whole male female thing. But keep in mind, I would say a majority of your clients are female.
Yes, they
okay.
are.
You haven't had the males that were born with a baseball bat and beat themselves over the head for some of the decisions that they made. So as we expand this podcast, you might have some big burly men knocking on your door.
Would be just fine. I'm an equal opportunity consultant and friend.
For
no worries.
Consultation. Keep that door open. We're coming up on the close of the show here. And I am now certain that this is not the inside voice we're talking about that I talk about with my 5-year-old. You wanted to revisit that?
This experience I can't share as my own. And I was curious if you made a conscious decision to not talk negatively about yourselves in front of your kids, like saying things like, oh, I'm so stupid, or I'm fat, or I'm whatever that seems negative. I was curious if you made a conscious decision not to do that so that they don't learn to do it. Does
you know,
that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. And it's funny because not only do we make a big effort to not talk down on ourselves, because we've got plenty of friends whose kids are our kids' age, and you know, they are very high on themselves. They are to the point where, you know, it could be a bit of a problem where they are so self-absorbed. And then, you know, with our own kids, we have to keep them in check because they have a hard enough time lifting themselves up. I've got one kid who is, you know, a gifted honor roll and an incredible athlete all at the same time. And he is so hard on himself. And baseball, this is game. And you say beating yourself with a baseball bat, he almost does that literally.
Oh, that makes my heart hurt.
He doesn't really take the bat to himself and hit himself. But
well, I know, but figuratively, it makes my heart hurt.
It's like I have to say to the older one, listen, mom and dad are so proud of you. And we tell you all the time how proud of you or how proud we are of you. And it's worthless if you don't accept it and be proud of yourself. So it's finding the medium between being too hard on yourself and thinking you're just the greatest person in the whole wide world. He's got to find that balance. And, you know, he's working on it. He's a smart kid and he knows. But it's a very good question. But yes, we do make a concerted effort not to spread negativity in the and the issues that we have, we're careful about how we share it.
I think that is really what brings it all back. And we're all about intersecting personal and business. And so I just want to just point out a lot of things of what you said do apply to the business mentality in that you can be the most successful business owner. You can have tons of awards. You can be the most renowned expert in your space. But if you can't receive or believe in your own success, it's never going to grow to the level that it could be. And if you get fired up and feel the momentum of your success, and then you squash it like a bug because your negative self-talk is not like giving you that right to earn it or deserve it. And the worst, I think, is when you take that voice out for lunch and you play with it in the playground and you introduce it to all your friends and talk to strangers on the street and they see it and hear your inside voice come out, then no matter how good you are, they go, whatever. And so I really think what you said is so important because kids learning that as a young age, but even big kids like me, I mean, I did not learn that until I was way older than your son. No, I'm just saying.
This was a great show.
So, hey, Russ, before we wrap up, I've been thinking about that question you asked me. If I knew what how'd you ask me? If I knew then what I know now, would I have still started this business? And I would like to tell you that if I knew then what I know now, I would have started an even bigger business.
Who says this isn't an even bigger business?
Oh, and it's about to be, believe me. Rocket ship launch.
Absolutely.
But I'm just saying, I always like to end with a positive, you know that. So I answered your story in a heartbroken way, but I also want to say that, you know, we're in 2016 now, and that was 2004. And if I knew then what I know now, I would have definitely started an even bigger business back then.
Well, I'm glad it happened the way it was. I'm glad you didn't start a bigger business because now is the time. This is the time. This is where you got the difference between, in your theory, the male-female thing, and you came out of the womb with the baseball bat and everything. I have no regrets for your past because you've learned absolutely an incredible amount of information and just life experiences from it. And this business is your baby and it's going to grow into an amazing child.
Well, thank you. I feel like I've gone Little League and now we're in the World Series Stadium, sold out.
We hope you've enjoyed today's journey, and we invite you to visit journeytothere.com to download full episodes, find show notes, and connect with us by signing up for our newsletter. We want to hear from you. Give us feedback or ask any questions by clicking or tapping Contact Us. That's journeytothere.com.